Confidence starts with loving who you are. And when your skin feels nourished and glows on the outside, you naturally radiate confidence from the inside. Give your skin a glow-up with Osea's clinically proven Mega Moisture Duo. This ultra-hydrating body care features two of Osea's best sellers, Undaria Algae Body Oil and Undaria Collagen Body Lotion. These seaweed-powered heroes use skincare-level ingredients normally reserved for your face for results you can see and confidence you can feel. Osea has been making clean, clinically proven seaweed-infused face and body care products for over 28 years. This luxurious skincare is vegan, cruelty-free, and climate-neutral certified, so you never have to choose between your values and your best skin. Glow from the inside out. Get 10% off your first order with code GLOW at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code GLOW.
Join us for a journey as we go back to the great civilizations of the past. Who were the people? What were they like? How did they begin? And how did they end? Let's find out on this episode of Fan of History. Hello, Dan.
Hello, Bernie, and hello, listeners. You might have noticed a change in the Fan of History feed. We have been doing this podcast for 10 years. And I think this podcast should be bigger. I am a full-time podcaster since 2015. And I have four podcasts with more than 10,000 listeners. But this is not one of them. And I think this is a podcast that I love, and a podcast that deserves to be bigger. So I did a lot of analysis trying to figure out what was wrong with this podcast. And I came to the conclusion, together with Bernie, that the old episodes are holding us back. The old episodes are old. They are recorded before I understood audio. They have a lot of problems. But of course, as this is a historical narrative of all world history since 1000 BC, I can't just delete them. But we made the decision that the feed should start with episode 88, The Sack of Babylon. It's an episode from May 8th, 2019. And it is also the first episode where the show had its third co-host, the third American on the show, and by far the best. And I'm, of course, talking about Bernie here.
Thank you.
Because I feel that episode 88 is representative of what we are doing today. So the public feed will start with episode 88. And one reason I made this decision is that we get a lot of listens on the first episodes, and those people don't continue to listen. But the old episodes are still possible to listen to, but you can do it through Fan of History Plus. I talked about Fan of History Plus before. You can find the links in the show notes. So we had one level of Fan of History Plus before. That's for $4 a month plus VAT. You get access to all the old episodes. And you get rid of all the ads in the show. But now I've added another level. So for $2 a month, you get access to all the old episodes.
Okay.
So they're still there. I will remove them from YouTube as well. So the only way to listen to episode 1 to 88, and there's a lot of good stuff there, like Ashurnasirpal II, most of the Assyrian Empire, and the timeline of world history where we went back to 200,000 BC. But those are all in Fan of History Plus now. And the podcast I'm doing with Bernie begins in episode 88 with the Sack of Babylon and your favorite character, Bernie.
Gyges.
Yes, Gyges. So that's why we have done this. And I think this will improve the podcast and give a better first impression of the podcast to new listeners.
Yeah, I think that was a good idea.
But if you want to listen to the old episodes, they are still available in Fano History Plus.
Yeah, you should try to get access to them, because there is good ones. Just like the, you know, you have the Siege of Babylon by Sennacherib's with the Angel of Death. That's all in there. And you do a good analysis of that too, so.
And there's a lot of things like the rise of the Assyrian Empire.
Yeah.
And King Mu of China and his robot.
I didn't even listen to that one. I better get a subscription.
You should listen to that. That's very interesting. If you support Fan of History on Patreon, we love it. We are receiving quite a lot of support on Patreon compared to the number of listeners we have. And please continue to support us on Patreon. But due to the way that Patreon is structured, we cannot provide the old episodes there. So they're only available on Fan of History Plus. Because you can't go back on Patreon and put episodes into Patreon.
Yeah.
And have them properly put on the right date, etc. It will be super confusing on Patreon. People will quit Patreon. Because I just did this for another podcast with horrible results. So the old episodes are on Fan of History Plus. We appreciate the support on Patreon. Please continue to support us on Patreon.
I would imagine if some of our Patreons wanted something, we could figure out a way. If you message us, right, we can get you an episode.
Yes, we could do. We could actually send the files themselves. But
yeah, so if you're a Patreon and you don't want to switch, or you just want to keep it going, and we want something, just let us know. You know, I love our Patreons. You're asking me for anything, I'll take good care of you.
So that's the big thing for this week. But we'll continue as before. And I also like to add that all the episodes of What's New in History are still available, of course.
Okay, and they're free.
Yes.
Cool.
And I would also like to thank our listeners from Belgium.
Please.
There was a very weird incident. And I don't know if this happened for real, if it was a Belgian computer did something. But we got a lot of new listeners from Belgium. Very suddenly, like in a day. And I hope some of you are still there. So if you're Belgian, please let us know.
Yes. And I don't believe what Dr. Evil said about the Belgians making him so evil.
If you like to communicate with us, you can either send a message on Facebook that will reach Bernie, or you could email simwaypodcast@gmail.com, Simway with a set.
Z. Zeta, a Z. Zed.
Yeah.
Yes. The last letter of the alphabet.
Yes. And Bernie, you have a few iTunes reviews, right?
Yeah, we got some reviews here. Yay. Both 5 stars. This one's from J.D. Coleman. Great podcast. One of my favorite podcasts to listen to lately. It's actually been quite bingeable, which is perfect for me. Dan and Bernie do great work, and I feel like the podcast has really transformed since they began their collaboration. This is the place to go for good ancient history and funny banter as well. I hope to see the podcast continue for many more years. Thank you, J.D. Coleman.
Thank you, J.D. Coleman, and that sort of confirms what I said.
Yeah.
The podcast has really transformed since Bernie came on as a co-host, and that's the podcast we like to market to people.
Yes, thank you. I appreciate the kudos. We had another one from MGP Terps. It talks about what's new. It says the title is What's New in History is a great addition and shows that history is constantly uncovered and refreshes the way we look at the past.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Both 5 stars again. Thank you. So now we'll take a minute. If you take a minute now and rate us, so we'll wait. Do, 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 do. You can just pause it and do it.
Yeah, please do.
Yeah.
Okay, remember, Nabonidus is the king of Babylon.
Yes.
Or is he? Because he's gone away on business of the moon god. And he's left his son, Belshazzar, in charge of Babylon. And now I'd like to quote the Bible.
Okay.
Where is this in the Bible?
Oh, it's the book of Daniel.
Of course it is the book of Daniel. The prophet who is in Babylon during the 540s BC. So now, quoting the Bible. Your Majesty, the Most High God gave your father Nebuchadnezzar serenity and greatness and glory and splendor. Because of the high position he gave him, all the nations and peoples of every language dreaded and feared him. Those the king wanted to put to death, he put to death. Those he wanted to spare, he spared. Those he wanted to promote, he promoted. And those he wanted to humble, he humbled. But when his heart became arrogant and hardened with pride, he was deposed from his royal throne and stripped of his glory. He was driven away from people and given the mind of an animal. He lived with the wild donkeys and ate grass like the ox. And his body was drenched with the dew of heaven until he acknowledged that the Most High God is sovereign over all kingdoms on earth and sets over them anyone he wishes. But you, Belshazzar, his son, have not humbled yourself, though you know all this. Instead, you have set yourself up against the Lord of heaven. You had the goblets from his temple brought to you, and you and your nobles, your wives and your concubines drank wine from them. You praised the gods of silver, of gold, of bronze, iron, wood and stone, which cannot see or hear or understand. But you did not honor the God who holds in his hands your life and all your ways. Therefore, he sent the hand that wrote the inscription. This is the inscription that was written. Mene, mene, tekel, parsin. Here is what these words mean. Mene, God has numbered the days of your reign and brought it to an end. Tekel, you have been weighed on the scales and found wanting. Parson, your kingdom is divided and given to the Medes and Persians.
Well, that's the end.
Okay.
This is so I should give a little background why he said that.
Please do.
So this is the part where I've been saying, we're going to bring it up. I'm going to tell you what the writing on the wall means. First of all, we know that Nebuchadnezzar didn't turn into a wild donkey and eat grass. That's like, and there's been like historians that were going on and on about maybe he had a disease or stuff, but we know that that's not really what happened. So the book of Daniel gets it all mixed up. But the many, many tekel parson part is, so during, they were having a bank, so the king of Babylon, who he says is Belshazzar at the time, is having a feast and he's drinking out of the cups from the temple of Jerusalem that was, you know, that Babylon conquered in 587. And he's drinking out of those cups and the So then this ghostly hand comes and writes that on the wall. Many, many tekel parson. So then that's what it meant.
Ah, so bad news for Babylonia from the Lord.
Yeah, indeed it is.
And the Lord is not wrong in this aspect.
He is not. So yeah, just before you get into the whole thing, there's this other little passage I thought for fan of history fans would be, you guys, because when I read it the first time, like doing for these episodes, I was like, oh, that makes sense. But I know if I read it a long time ago or you read it in church or wherever you read the Bible, you're, what is that? I don't know what that means, but I bet a lot of you guys will get a lot of it. So one of the dreams that had to be interpreted, this is why Daniel becomes like an advisor to the kings and everything. This dream was actually to Nebuchadnezzar, and that's how he became an advisor, and he interpreted a dream, and first Nebuchadnezzar says he was going to kill all the people, all the advisors, and like all the magicians and stuff in Babylon, but then they bring Daniel, and Daniel is able to tell him what the dream, he doesn't even need to hear the dream, he tells him what his dream was, and then he interprets it. So this is the dream. He says, "Your Majesty looked, and there before you stood a large statue, an enormous, dazzling statue, awesome in appearance. The head of the statue was made of pure gold, the chest and arms of silver, the belly and thighs of bronze, its feet partly of iron and partly of baked clay. While you were watching, a rock was cut out, but not by human hands. It struck the statue on its feet of iron and clay and smashed them. The iron, the clay, the bronze, the silver, and gold were all broken to pieces and became like chaff on a threshing floor in the summer. The wind swept them away without leaving a trace. But the rock that struck the statue became a huge mountain and filled the whole earth." So what do you think of those symbolism in that statue?
It also sounds like things are going to go bad for Babylon.
Yes. Exactly. And then, this is actually how you kind of know, I think, that the book of Daniel is, if they thought it was written at the time, is an anachronism, because basically they're saying the statue is made of pure gold. So gold represents Babylon. They're gold. Chest and arms of silver, that represents the Medes and the Persians. Belly and thighs of bronze, that represents the Greeks, who are, you know, the Greeks of... because the Alexander the Great's kingdoms. And then the legs of iron, they also represent those kingdoms, and could be the Romans. We're not sure. They're not people. Different ones think different things. And the same thing, partly of iron and partly of baked clay. That could be that. But then the rock that comes out is supposed to be the hand of God that smashes all the kingdoms. And then, they're going to enter the world, kingdom of God. That's the symbolism of all the different nations that came before.
And the huge mountain that fills the whole earth is the power of the Lord or something like that?
Yes, exactly. Book of Daniel is very apocalyptic.
And we know that Nabonidus is doing not very much.
No. Nabonidus is away in Timna.
Oh, he's doing a lot, but he's not stopping the Persians.
No, probably not.
There is a common saying that Nabonidus is like the first archaeologist.
Yeah.
And of course, there have been kings before him that were interested in the past.
Yes.
But he seems to be very interested in the past and also in animals and displaying animals.
Yeah, amazing. A couple of things, I think. Went down rabbit holes with this and stuff. And he was somewhat of an antiquarian. And we know Ashurbanipal, he was into looking for all that stuff, right? Because he made his library.
Yeah, but he was focused on books and writings.
Yes. I think he was focused on magic, Ashurbanipal, in my opinion. I think that Nabonidus was sort of a make Babylon great again type of guy, you know? Like a Confucius. Confucius was longing for the past. Not necessarily longing, but, he respected the past. But one of the things is, it's interesting is, and do you remember when we would talk about the Assyrians, and sometimes we'd read an inscription from one of them, and they would talk about how they would rebuild a place, and a lot of the inscriptions that were found on the things, like they were found on the foundations. And so I think a lot of what he was doing when he was excavating anyway. I think that he was probably saving the things and keeping it for posterity and stuff like that and showing, you know, respecting the past. But I don't think he was an archaeologist that he went out and made special digs. I think what happened was when it was a religious thing and it's probably a practical thing. When you built a new temple or a new major thing like that, you got to bring it all the way down to the foundations. When they would do that, they would find all this other stuff. And a lot of times when you built the foundation, like when you did that, you would put something in there, you know, like a sort of a time capsule. And those were the things he was taking out and finding and putting them in the museum.
And we do indeed have a museum of Nabonidus' time.
Yes, we do. So, yeah, well, there's a museum. I think it's probably his daughter's. Her name was Enigaldi. And he made her the priestess of the moon god of Sin in Ur. And Woolsey, the guy from, he's actually, the museum is in Philly here. Woolsey, he was in 1925 when he excavated Ur about, it's only I think it was like 150 meters away, something like that, from the ziggurat. They found this area, and they figured out it was a museum because each item that was there was labeled with a little clay, you know, marker in three languages.
That's amazing.
Yeah, really. Some of the things they found, they said, was one thing is called a kuduru, which is a cassite boundary marker, and it was carved with a snake and emblems of various gods. A part of the statue of King Shulgi.
Who is that?
I don't know, but that's old. I'm pretty sure that's Sumerian. I've kind of heard that name, you know, back. You're probably talking like, you know, the 2000s BC time.
It's the second king of the third dynasty of Ur.
There you go.
Who reigned between 2094 and 2046 BC.
That was pretty close.
Indeed.
It says a clay cone that had been part of a building at Larsa. Yeah, Nabonidus, because his mom was an Assyrian, and he, at the very end, he starts talking about, he's in his inscriptions, he writes about his Assyrian, their great Assyrian ancestors. So, and you know, a lot of Babylonians weren't too thrilled with the Assyrians, obviously.
I'm talking about his mother, Adad-Gupi.
Yeah.
Possibly the daughter of Ashurbanipal of Assyria.
Right.
She finally dies in 549 BC.
Finally.
She is 101 years old.
Wow. That's unbelievable. So then, honestly, he was an ancestor to, if that's all true, then Ashurbanipal is his grandfather.
This could be great propaganda as well.
Yeah. Yeah, it could be.
But Nabonidus is in Taima on the Arabian Peninsula, while Belshazzar rules Babylon. And this could also be an arrangement to save Nabonidus from his son.
Right.
That is, he's giving his son the power because the son wants the power.
Right.
And that's why Nabonidus is concerned with a lot of other things, because he never really wanted the power.
Right.
Belshazzar just put him up as a figurehead king.
Right. I agree with that. I think that's got a lot to do with it.
And Nabonidus is staying in Taima until 543 or 542.
Okay.
Most of the surviving Babylonian documentation says that he stayed there until October 543.
Okay.
But it's unclear what he was doing in Taima.
Yeah, there's all these things, you know, where some historians say, well, maybe he was... And I don't buy it, because I buy the ones who don't buy it. They, you know, that he was managing the trade routes, keep that area, you know, the Egyptian trade routes all secure. I don't know why the king would have to stay there for 10 years. And that also maybe he was planning, you know, for an invasion of Egypt. You want to know something crazy? I know this is, I think, a lot of the things are. It's because you'll find that kings just don't want to go to Babylon and do the New Year's ceremony. And do you remember, like, we talked about it, that it was a lot of fun and all this crazy party. I think the people love the party. But do you remember they have to slap the king, like, really hard?
Okay.
I think that's why a lot of them don't want to do it. There's one, I don't remember, I think we'll cover it in the future. I read some, you know, where maybe it was Cyrus or so. They just put, maybe it was one of the other, maybe it was Alexander, I don't remember. But they'll put, like, their son to do it, to do the ceremony. Like, nobody wants to do the ceremony. It's like... Sennacherib didn't want to do the ceremony. Ashurbanipal made his brother the king. Like, nobody wants to get whacked by the priest, I think. I don't think it's just because they don't want to get physically hurt that much, because they do say it hits them really hard when they do it. But maybe it's just like an embarrassing thing for a, you know, like, you're the king of the whole empire, and then you have to come to Babylon, being that you're the king there too, and then get slapped really hard by a, you know, not, I don't know. It's just my theory.
We also have evidence that Nabonidus is obsessed with the Assyrians and have included them as his royal ancestors. And he's more concerned about religion, of course.
Of course.
And the past.
Yeah.
And not the Persian threat.
Right.
And it is very likely that there is Persian propaganda happening in the 540s.
Yeah.
Cyrus is busy. He's busy with everything we told you about. And then he's busy in the east of the Persian Empire.
Okay.
Doing things in the east that is not documented. It is a bit like the dark side of the moon. We can see the western part of the Persian Empire because we have light on the western part from the Greek writers and from Babylon. But the dark side of the Persian Empire, the eastern side, there's nobody writing about it.
Yeah.
The Persians suck at documenting what they do.
Indeed.
They're maybe even worse than the Assyrians.
Yeah, definitely worse.
Most of the things we know from the Persian Empire are from Greeks. And they are not concerned about what Cyrus is doing in the east.
Not at this time, anyway. Well, not Cyrus either.
So probably Cyrus is campaigning in the east between 545 and 540. It is hard to date the Ionian campaign we described in the last episode.
Right.
So we have just a couple of words of Cyrus' activities. He is campaigning against Gedrosia and fails. And then he is fighting in Chorasmia, Margiana, and other provinces in the east. But that's all we know of Cyrus' activity. But during all this time, it is highly likely that he is working on Babylonia.
Oh, yeah.
The Neo-Babylonian Empire is weak. Belshazzar might be more concerned with having these parties. And Nabonidus is concerned with everything but the Persians. Nabonidus is neglecting his royal duties. And the people of Babylonia know that this new conqueror, who is more successful than anybody ever was, is also quite peaceful. If you concede to him,
yeah.
If you become a part of his empire, you are treated gently. And you're not treated like the Assyrians would treat you.
Right.
So Persian propaganda is probably filling the empire. Like, your king is not doing his duties. If I were your king, things would be different.
Right. Yeah, they're using their intelligence. I always say it, the intelligence means doing propaganda, like, to the masses and, you know, people that could make things. They're also looking for informants and looking for information and using that information against, and then getting, like, spies and, like, double agents. Not necessarily just a spy, but to literally open the door and let you in. And, you know, I think he probably was working on a lot of that over these, in this time in the 40s, regarding Babylon.
We have a couple of artifacts from Nabonidus, where he talks about what he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And the best of them is the Nabonidus cylinder from Sippar.
Yeah.
It's a long text in which Nabonidus describes how he repaired 3 temples and a bit about his religious attitude.
He sure does.
There are also cylinders from Ur, and they mention Belshazzar. The Ur cylinder states, quote, "As for me, Nabonidus, king of Babylon, save me from sinning against your great godhead, and grant me as a present a life long of days. And as for Belshazzar, the eldest son, my offspring, instill reverence for your great godhead in his heart, and may he not commit any cultic mistake. May he be sated with a life of plenitude," end quote. nothing about the Persians, only worries that his son is too worldly and doesn't care about the moon god.
And doesn't make a mistake when he's doing his, you know, ceremonies.
I like to quote parts of the Sippar cylinder as well.
Okay.
So, quote, I, Nabonidus, the great king, the strong king, the king of the universe, the king of Babylon, the king of the four corners, the caretaker of Esagila and Esida, for whom Sin and Ningal in his mother's womb decreed a royal fate as his destiny. The son of Nabu-Balassi-Ikwi, the wise prince, the worshippers of the great gods. End quote.
Jeez.
And then he tells you of all the temples he rebuilt.
Right.
In great detail, which I will spare you.
Thanks. I believe I have read that too. That's where I got to thinking of how he was just digging up those, you know, how he was finding the foundations.
And that's where we leave Nabonidus for the 540s.
Okay.
And he is going to get a bit of problems in the 530s.
Oh, yeah. When did you say he comes back to Babylon?
In 543.
Okay, 543. Okay.
And to give him some credit, it seems that his attitude changes.
Yeah.
And that he starts to think about the inevitable Persian attack on Babylonia.
Right.
But that's for our next decade.
All right, so we'll cover that in the next decade, the things that he does in advance of that.
Yes.
Okay.
I also want to talk briefly about Amasis II in Egypt.
Okay.
And we talked a bit about him in last episode as well.
Yeah.
But Egypt is doing great.
Yeah, for now. Doing good.
Yes, Amasis has a lot of contact with Greece and Polycrates. He is talked about a bit in Herodotus.
Yeah.
It seems that Egypt has now reached a new level of wealth.
Mm-hmm.
We can see it in the temples in Lower Egypt that they are getting worked on. And maybe in a sense you could say that this is a return to the old golden times. It looks fantastic for Egypt. There's a lot of money coming in, a lot of temples being built, a lot of Greeks working for the pharaoh.
Mm-hmm.
It seems that Amasis actually marries a Greek princess.
Yeah. There's a story in there. Did you see it? Did you find it when you were about Herodotus talks about how she couldn't please him or whatever?
No, tell me.
So I don't have it in front of me, but if I can remember correctly, I might have to be a little, you know, close your ears if you're young and children are listening. Basically, he says this may be not her, but I think it is. So he marries this person, you know, it's like not his first wife, and he can't do it, you know, like he can't get it up, let's just say. And he says, woman, you've betwixt me. And if you don't fix this within, you know, tomorrow, you're dead, basically. And then she goes to an oracle and does something. And I don't remember what all happens. But the next day he does is he could do the business with her. It's just another example about how, you know, they're like blaming the woman because the guy can't get it up.
Was that the oracle at the Temple of Viagra?
I think it was Cialis Temple.
The goddess of erections.
Yeah, that'd be Dionysus.
Yeah.
God almighty. But yeah, so anyway, he tells a story in there. He always has these little stories in the side. Salacious.
Herodotus visits Egypt less than a century after the time of Amasis II.
Yeah.
And he writes, quote, it is said that it was during the reign of Amasis II that Egypt attained its highest level of prosperity, both in respect of what the river gave the land and in respect of what the land yielded to men, and that the number of inhabited cities at that time reached in total 20,000, end quote.
Wow.
Yeah, 20,000 cities.
I mean, there obviously weren't Babylon-sized cities. If there were, maybe, you know, what's a city? It could be a little smaller village, but
I think they threw in a couple of villages and towns.
Yeah, I would think so.
We think today that this Egypt we speak of, the Egypt of Amasis II, only goes down to the first cataract.
Oh, okay.
But we also know that Amasis has a lot of influence on Cyprus, and maybe even ruled it.
Oh.
He's also putting his greedy hands on Cyrene in Libya.
Oh, that's right.
And remember, this is the pharaoh who stopped the invasion from Nebuchadnezzar.
Yeah, he's been around a while.
Yeah, it's the same guy.
Yeah, there's I'm sorry, I don't have it all in front of me. I was having a conversation with somebody last night, and they're like, you know so much. I go, yeah, but I know it, but I couldn't sit and tell you about it in a podcast. I don't know all the details, but yeah, Amasis was, I think, wasn't he like a didn't he overthrow?
Yeah, he overthrew the old pharaoh.
Right. He tells a whole crazy story about it.
And so did we.
Aha!
So here.
The mind is a terrible thing to lose, Dan.
So here, at the end of the 540s BC, even as the Neo-Babylonian Empire is about to come to an end, Amasis II's destiny is to be the second to last Egyptian ever to be the pharaoh of Egypt.
Wow.
This is a kingdom that has been going strong ever since the Scorpion King.
Wow.
It has been 2,600 years since Narmer united Upper and Lower Egypt. But the Egyptian pharaoh's rule of Egypt is about to come to an end forever.
Wow. And Mesopotamia, too, is the last king.
Oh, yes. I'll do my epic speech on that in the 530s.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, but think about it. Like we've been saying, how this is such a turning point right now because, I mean, this is ancient, ancient history. Egypt and Mesopotamia are about to be, as Herodotus would say, become slaves. They're not independent anyway.
And this, again, really points out how exceptional Cyrus is. Just a couple of episodes ago, he was a minor vassal king of the Medes. But he is now almost already the greatest conqueror the world has ever seen.
Yeah.
And that leads me to a less important king that I want to mention here. It's Amyntas I of Macedonia.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, all right. That name is, there's a lot of Amyntases, I think.
Yes, there's a lot of Amyntases. It's because of this guy.
Okay.
Because it is at this point you can start to talk about the kingdom of Macedonia. Because this is the first guy we see in the records that he's establishing connections, diplomatic connections, with other states and Greek cities. We don't know a lot about him. But he has representation in Athens.
Wait, he has what?
He's talking to Athens.
Oh, okay.
And the Athenians know about him.
Oh, okay.
And the sort of legend about him is that he's the first Macedonian king, and he's also the first Macedonian king who considers what would happen if he could use the conflicts in Greece between the city-states to conquer all of Greece.
Oh, really?
Yes, but that will not happen during his reign, but during the reign of another Macedonian king, which we'll talk a bit about later, like in 100 episodes or so. Not in 100 episodes, but for 100 episodes.
I understand who you're talking about, but guess what? Very soon, there's going to be a What's New in History that you and me are going to talk about that same person.
I love it.
I actually just listened to Dan Carlin's All the Olympia one.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Now for something completely different.
Wait, like Monty Python. And now for something completely different.
Do you remember the kingdom of Magadha?
They're in India, I think.
Yes, ruled by King Bimbisara. We mentioned him in the Buddha episodes.
Yeah.
And also in the Jainism episode. And it might be, because dating is hard, that in 554, he actually becomes the king of Magadha. He is 15 years old in the account that comes down to us. And he is the first king in the Harjanka dynasty, because his father, Bhatia, was just a simple chieftain. But Bimbisara will rule Magadha and make it powerful. Maybe with the help of Buddha and Mahavira.
Oh.
But this is the beginning of his reign, the traditional date of the beginning of his reign. So I just wanted to mention that, as we talked a lot about him before.
Yeah. It was funny how you said one time, I was listening to our China episode, and I was like, how we have so much information, all this detail, and you're like, they probably, all that stuff was happening in India too, but we just don't have it all written down.
No, and we still don't have it written down, but it's coming down to us from...
Right.
From when the Indians learned to read and write again.
Right.
There's also an event in 543 in India.
Okay.
A prince from North India, Prince Vijaya, invades Ceylon and establishes a dynasty on Sri Lanka.
Wow, that's a long distance.
Yes. he probably did it very navally, very much with the Navy.
I would think. It's probably a good Herodotus would tell a good story about that, how they kicked him out and all his people got on a boat and they sailed down there and conquered it.
Somebody was confused by some porridge or something, which made them open their gates.
You know, exactly.
543 is also one of the traditional death dates of Siddhartha Gautama, the Buddha.
Oh.
They believe that in Thailand, for example.
Okay.
But as we said in the Buddha episode, it's all very, very unreliable.
Indeed.
And that's where we're going to leave most of the world for the 540s. But we have one tiny place left to cover.
Mm.
Probably the most populous area of the world.
Yes.
Since the start of this podcast and still. And I'm, of course, talking about China.
China. And yeah, we're going to be covered. That'll be the last in the 540s will be China. And there's a bunch going on, of course, as usual. I listened to a couple, and he kept mentioning, I'm sure this happened in Chinese history, because it is. Chinese history is crazy. There's so many things.
But that's for next episode.
Yeah. I hope you guys are enjoying this, because I'm sitting here thinking, I'm like, I think I'm hurting my brain trying to do all these places. There's a lot going on in the 540s.
I'm very happy that I don't have to do China.
Yeah, but I'm starting to get into it. Well, we'll talk about it when we do China, but yeah, I'm starting to get better at it.
So that's for next episode.
Okay.
But now, please go to Fan of History Plus and sign up to support us.
Right now.
You will get rid of the ads if you choose the higher level, and you'll get access to all the old episodes on any level at Fan of History Plus. Also, thanks to all our patrons at Patreon.
Yes.
You make this podcast possible. And if you want to reach me, please send an email to simwaypodcast@gmail.com. Simway with a Z. You can also check out our Fan of History Facebook page. That's mostly Bernie's. If you send a message there, you will reach Bernie.
Yes.
You can also follow me on Instagram. I'm Dan Horning, but with an umlaut over the O.
Umlaut.
Yes, I'm the only one in the world on Instagram with that name.
Amazing.
So I'm pretty easy to find. I post a lot of things on my Instagram, but it concerns my 13 podcasts, of which only this one is in English, sadly.
Oh, this is the last English one. All right.
Yes, but we will keep going with this podcast, because we love it.
We will. We do.
Thank you for listening to Fan of History.
Please, thank you for listening. Indeed. Yeah, and keep listening and rate us, and we'll catch you next time. Cheers.
Cheers.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please consider supporting us on Patreon. patreon.com/fanofhistory. Just $1 an episode would help us out. Thanks, and see you next time.